Tom Austin settled behind the sheriff's desk. He'd made his rounds of the town's businesses on this day like he had for several days now. His crutch already discarded, he walked the short street with a limp as he favored the wounded leg. A lot had happened in the last few days to put the town's citizens in a constant state of nervous alert, and Tom was determined to man up to his responsibility as sheriff, a title he assumed after Oscar Perkins resigned. All of the few merchants rose to the occasion in a show of solidarity against another attack on their town. Tom was sure he could count on Joe Galt, Gus Hopkins, and Fred Hatfield. They had more to lose than the others. He didn't expect much from his old employer, Arnold Paz. Arnold just didn't have much stomach for fighting. Some of the farmers who lived close to town had offered to help if needed, but of the lot, only Bob and Patty Witcher demonstrated their commitment. It was difficult for a man of Tom's age to seat himself in the sheriff's desk chair and not feel the satisfaction of being of such importance. Although the other townsfolk had endorsed his appointment, there was no form of compensation now that Raymond Pryor was dead. Tom's meager income still came from his employ as Arnold Posse's stable manager. Still, there was the feeling of being in charge that temporarily made up for the lack of income. Planning to rest his leg for a while before making his presence known on the street again, he took his arm out of the sling and tested the soreness of his shoulder. It was still too tender to go without the sling support for any length of time, but he knew he was going to discard it if the showdown with Cantrell occurred. He lifted the edge of his bandage to take a peek at the wound. It was healing nicely, thanks to Dr. Taylor's care. A few more days and it should be a lot less tender. He put his arm back in the sling, and then, with nothing else to do, he picked up the Winchester rifle Raymond Pryor purchased for the sheriff's office and checked the action. He was reloading the live cartridge that was ejected as a result when something in the street caught his eye. Pausing to gaze out the open door of his office, he was stunned to see the four men riding abreast down the dusty street.
My God.
In spite of all his mental preparation, he found himself frozen in his chair as the terrible reality of the situation struck him like a boulder. It was Cantrell and his men, and he was going to have to act. It seemed as if time stood still as he remained immobile behind the desk, but when he finally willed himself to get up from the chair and go to the door, the four riders were headed for the saloon. Removing his sling and casting it aside, he clutched the Winchester with a desperate grip, trying to decide what to do.
Just start shooting.
Yet he hesitated, not sure if that might start a massacre of the whole town. He looked down at his hands, clutching the rifle so hard that his knuckles were white, and the weapon seemed to be twice as heavy as before. Mike Taylor ran across from the barber shop.
Tom! It's them! They're here!
What are you gonna do?
Doing his best to bolster his courage, Tom hesitated before answering, realizing that, like him, no one else along the street deemed it wise to take a shot at the invaders. All were reluctant to trigger the shootout. By this time, the four were tying their horses at the hitching rail in front of the saloon.
I expect I'll go up to the saloon and take care of them.
He didn't know what that would entail.
Oh, I wonder what Gus is gonna do.
They heard no report of a gunshot as the four men disappeared through the doorway to the saloon.
I don't know, but I better get up there and take charge of things.
With fatal resolve, Tom Austin gave the doctor's son a determined nod and started toward the saloon. Behind him, Mike ran to the blacksmith shop to find Joe Galt. The four outlaws had not passed the general store unnoticed. Fred Hatfield stood beside the front window, peeking at the unwelcome visitors. Like Tom Austin, he held a weapon in his hands, but he was afraid to use it, lest he call death and destruction down upon himself. The will to fight stood tall when the citizens gathered to talk about defending the town, but in the reality of seeing the faces of the dangerous men, Fred lost the nerve to fire the first shot. Relieved temporarily when they passed him by and went to the saloon, he hurried to the door, turned the close sign around, and pulled down the door shades.
Fred, what is it?
Fred was peeking again out the corner of the window.
They're back! Cantrell! And he brought more men!
Lena's face blanched, and Patty Witcher went immediately to the corner of the counter where she had left her shotgun. As before, when the outlaw suddenly appeared at his door, Gus Hopkins was momentarily paralyzed. He let his hand drift underneath the counter to rest on the stock of the shotgun, but he was unwilling to withdraw it, lest it meant certain death. To confirm his fears, Mace Cantrell greeted him with a malevolent grin on his unshaven face.
Hello, Gus. You go ahead and pull that shotgun.
Gus immediately placed both hands palm down on the counter and moved away from the shotgun.
I wasn't gonna do nothing. What can I do for you fellers?
Gus unconsciously flinched when One Eye reached over the counter and fished for the shotgun. Booker leveled cold eyes on him.
What do you think, Gus?
Gus immediately grabbed a bottle and filled four shot glasses while he nervously watched the door, praying that a party of concerned citizens would suddenly appear.
There's mud in your eye.
You know, you forgot to pay for them drinks you had in here the other day.
Yeah, we didn't forget. Keep pouring.
Gus did as he was told, wondering where Tom Austin and the others were. While Cantrell remained leaning on the bar, holding Gus captive with his menacing eyes, his three companions poked around the room, looking for anything that caught their fancy. Stump peered inside the door to the storeroom. Booker checked the back door to the alley, while One Eye walked behind the counter. Gliding past the frightened bartender, he went to the cash register and opened the drawer.
You sure as hell ain't got much money in here.
There ain't many customers coming in this early.
Gus glanced nervously from Cantrell to One Eye.
Maybe you keep more money someplace else. I believe I saw a safe in that back room when I was here before.
Mace turned his head to call out to Stump.
What about it, Stump? You see a safe in there?
Stump had already spotted the small safe against the wall in the storeroom.
Yeah, there's a safe in here. There ain't nothing in it. It ain't even locked.
Cantrell shot an accusing glance at Gus.
Business is bad. Hardly nothing at all since you killed Mr. Pryor.
Booker looked out the window before turning back.
I don't understand why this pitiful little town ain't dried up and blown away.
He glanced at One Eye.
Take whatever there is in the register.
Booker looked around him as if taking inventory.
At least we can take some whiskey with us.
He smiled at the helpless bartender.
And I reckon we can burn this place to the ground, unless Gus here remembers where he's got some more money hid.
I swear, there ain't no more money.
Well, hell, how can you stay in business? Might as well burn the place down anyway.
Impatient with the lack of potential wealth in the saloon, he turned to Stump.
Go next door to that store and see what they got.
All right.
Stump walked out of the saloon, went to the general store. He considered the locked doors and the closed sign. He reared back on one leg and kicked the double doors open. He stood triumphantly in the doorway, but just for a moment.
Well, here we are!
Shotgun blast flung him backward to land on the boardwalk. It happened so suddenly that Fred Hatfield was momentarily petrified, seated on her backside in the middle of the floor after pulling both triggers of the double-barreled shotgun at the same time. Patty Witcher seemed astonished by the results of her actions. She looked to either side of her, first at Fred, then at Lena. They both looked horrified by what had just taken place, and neither of them seemed able to move. Picking herself up, she reloaded both barrels of her shotgun.
Well, are we just gonna stand there like a statue? Close the doors before the next one comes busting in here.
Acting out of fear instead of bravado, Fred raced to obey.
Oh, yeah, of course. It ain't gonna do no good. The lock's busted.
Well, put the bar on it this time. It'll slow him down.
There's gonna be hell to pay. We'd better get out of here before his friends come busting in to get us.
I thought we said we was gonna fight those murderers and defend our town.
Things have changed now since you blasted one of them. They'll be coming here to kill every one of us. We've got to run for our lives.
Clutching his own shotgun, Hatfield started for the back door.
Come on, Lena, it's our only chance.
Out the door he went, with his wife right behind him.
Patty, run!
Run, hell! I didn't come here to run.
Patty moved to take cover behind the counter at the rear of the store.
Damn, they got stomped!
What the hell?
Who the hell did that?
Outside, she clearly heard the angry voices as Stump's companions found his blood-covered, spread-eagled body on the board walkway. Remembering then, she ran back to the center of the floor, grabbed the box of shotgun shells she had left there, and scurried back to the safety of the counter. Moments later, one of the doors opened no more than a crack as Booker tried to peek inside.
God almighty!
Booker jumped back away from the door. Then, enraged, he emptied his .44, sending bullets smashing through the window. One-Eyed Cantrell followed his lead, shattering the other window in a barrage of lead.
Well, look out! They're coming up behind us!
Booker and One-Eyed turned at once to discover Tom Austin running towards him in the middle of the street. Not far behind him, Joe Galt and Mike Taylor were running to catch up. While the sight of them was enough to end their assault on the general store, it by no means instilled fear in the gunmen.
Come on, you sons of bitches!
They were forced to dive for cover by Cantrell's barrage, Joe and Mike behind the corner of the barbershop porch, Tom behind a watering trough. An exchange of gunfire ensued. The range was too great for pistols. The outlaws had scant cover, however, and they decided they'd be better off to retreat back inside the saloon.
That son of a bitch barred the damn door!
The realization that Gus had taken the opportunity to place the heavy timber across the door as soon as the three of them ran out to discover Stump's body only fueled their anger.
I'm tired of fooling around these bastards!
Booker moved quickly to his horse, pulled his rifle from the saddle scabbard. Following his lead, Cantrell and One-Eye did the same. All three returned to the questionable cover of the saloon steps without getting shot.
Now, by God!
The superior accuracy of the rifles made things hot for the man behind the water trough, as well as the two behind the barbershop porch. As the lead came closer and closer, ripping chunks of wood from the porch floor and stripping large slivers from the trough, they found it hard to expose themselves long enough to aim at anything. They were forced to withdraw. Crawling backward, Tom safely reached the barbershop to join Joe and Mike, who were pinned down at the edge of the porch.
Go!
They all scrambled for safety behind the shop. Out of the line of fire beside the building, they paused a few moments to try to decide what to do, having found that charging the outlaws was one losing game. As they started toward the back in the alley, a window suddenly opened. Wilson James poked his head out.
What are you gonna do? I got my rifle, but I wasn't gonna stick my neck out in the street and get my head shot off.
Come on, there ain't but three of them. We can get some of the others to help. We can surround them.
Wilson opened the window all the way and scrambled out.
What about Gus?
Don't know, but I reckon he's all right. Looked to me like they tried to get back in the saloon but couldn't open the door. So I reckon he's holed up inside.
I heard a shotgun blasting. Sounded like it came from Fred's place.
Yeah. Fred cut down one of them outlaws when he tried to break in. That sure as hell took care of one of those bastards.
I reckon that means Gus and Fred are both holed up in their places. Ain't gonna be much use to us if they stay holed up. We best go back down to the stable, see if any help has showed up.
The farmers who had promised to help defend the town were supposed to come running if they heard shooting, and the stables were the agreed-upon assembly spot. Falling back to the stables, Tom was pleased to see Bob Witcher and Garland Wheeler arriving at the same time. They were six now, a much improved ratio. Wheeler was ready to charge up the street right away until Tom and Joe convinced him that it was not a good idea. Witcher made it clear that before he participated in any assault, he had to make sure Patty was safe somewhere. So he informed him that he was going to go to Fred Hatfield's house first to inform his wife to remain there.
Well, she's liable to want to jump right in the middle of the fight, and I want to tell her to stay the hell out of the way.
All right. We'll wait till you check to make sure Patty's all right. Then we'll split up and surround them.
How do we know where they'll be by that time? They ain't likely to sit there and wait while we're making up our minds what we're gonna do.
You're right. I reckon one of us ought to keep an eye on them till everybody's ready to move.
Yeah, I'll do it. I'll move across to the riverbank, like we did the first time we ran them out of town.
All right.
Tom racked his brain to try to formulate a plan of attack. There was no desire to rush to harden the killers. These men showed no inclination to run. But as sheriff, he knew the responsibility was his to direct the defense of the town.
Hey, you be careful, Joe. The rest of us can wait here till Bob gets back, or you signal that they're coming this way.
It's me, Bob Witcher.
Lena Hatfield ran to the front door of her home. She opened the door just a crack and peeked out.
Damn it, Lena, let me in.
Lena stood back and held the door open. Fred stood in the hall behind his wife.
Fred, what are you doing here? We thought you was holed up in your store after you shot that outlaw.
Well,
never mind. Where's Patty?
Patty's in the store. She's the one who shot that man.
What? What was she... Why'd you let her do that? You should have watched out for her.
Let her? Try to stop her is more like it. After she shot that man, we tried to get her to run, to come with us, but she wouldn't do it.
Oh, Lord.
Bob pictured his wife at the mercy of the desperados.
I gotta get her out of there. I should never let her stay here in town. I should have known she'd get herself in trouble. I gotta get back to the stables. We gotta get Patty out of your store.
He immediately gathered his strength, spurred by the panic to save his wife. He paused only briefly.
What are you hanging back here for, Fred? I thought we was all in this together.
I've got Lena to worry about.
Bob scorched him with a withering glance, then turned to leave. He recoiled in surprise at the sudden appearance of a man on horseback facing him. He fumbled to raise his shotgun, only to recognize the rider just in time.
Oh, Jason Storm, I almost shot you.
Well, I appreciate you holding off.
Jason reached behind him to give Rosanna a hand as she slid off the horse. The three went into the house. Lena hurried to embrace Rosanna.
Are you all right? I was so worried about you.
Why were you worried about me? I was with Jason.
We didn't know what to think. What if Jason had died? He was hurt pretty bad, was what we heard.
Lena gave Jason a quick glance.
No offense, Jason. We certainly prayed for your recovery.
She returned her attention to Rosanna.
Maybe it would have been just as well if you hadn't come back today.
We heard the shooting. I guess they're back.
We're back all right, and they got Patty trapped in Fred's store. We got to get to her.
Four of them?
Three of them. Patty shot one of them. That's why they're trying to get her.
Where are the other three now?
I don't know for sure, but they were outside the saloon when I came here looking for Patty. Tom Austin, Joe Galt, Garland Wheeler, and young Mike Taylor are waiting for me to come back.
With a little show of emotion, Jason listened while Bob and Fred filled him in on everything that had happened.
All right. Bob, let's go back to the stables and meet with the others. We'll see what we can do. Fred, you stay here and protect the women.
He had already judged Fred Hatfield's potential in a gunfight, and the order greatly pleased the storekeeper. With rifle in hand, he and Bob headed out on foot for the stables. The sight of the broad-shouldered ex-lawman immediately lifted the spirits of the small group of vigilantes waiting at Arnold Posse's stables. Tom Austin silently thanked God for Jason's timely return. Figuring that enough time had been wasted, Jason wanted to know where the three outlaws were now.
Joe Galt's over behind the riverbank. He yelled a minute ago. Said they finally busted Gus's door open and they're in the saloon now.
Good. We want them in a box, covered front and back. The first thing to do is get Bob's wife out of that damn store. Then I reckon we have to worry about Gus. Bob, you, Wheeler, and Mike head up the back alley to cover the back door of the saloon. Tom, you take Wilson up the river with you to join Joe Galt. Is that okay with you, Sheriff?
Sure. Where will you be?
Well, I'll see if I can get Bob's wife out of that store while you men have the saloon covered front and back.
I reckon we best give them a chance to surrender.
No, if you want to, but I don't expect they'll want to do that. And Tom, this time keep your head down when you do it.
Don't worry. I learned my lesson the last time.
Hopkins, you miserable son of a bitch!
Cantrell stuck his pistol in Gus's face.
I'm gonna blow you to hell!
Hold on, Cantrell. We may need him alive.
What for?
He cocked the hammer.
I ain't sure yet, but if things don't go the right way for us, we might need him.
Booker waited until Cantrell relented, then turned to One Eye over by the door.
What do you see, One Eye?
There's a couple more over by the riverbank where another one was. Looks like they're working their way up the bank to get in front of the saloon.
You can bet your ass there's more of them fixing to cover the back door, too. Damn, we're boxed in!
Booker cast an accusing eye in Cantrell's direction.
I thought you said there wasn't no fight left in these folks. Plumb ready for the picking, you said? Hell, there's a damn vigilante posse out there!
Wait till the shooting really gets started, then we'll see how many of them run for cover. Without Storm, they'll scatter like a bunch of chickens when the lead starts flying.
I reckon we'll just have to see. One Eye, you best go watch that back door.
Booker turned toward Gus.
You go pull up a chair to that back corner and sit down. Lean back against the wall so there's two legs off the floor and don't move from there.
Gus quickly did as he was told, still shaken from looking so recently in death's door. When the outlaws managed to break in again, when the nails in the bracket on the one side of the doors were forced out, he had the option of greeting them with a shotgun blast, just as he had assumed Fred Hatfield had done. But at the sight of the angry faces in the broken doorway, he lost his nerve, thinking of the possibility that he might kill one of them, but the other two would surely kill him. And so he laid his weapon down. Now, all he could do was hope to get the chance to escape. Booker went to stand beside the front door. Looking across the street toward the river, he got occasional glimpses of the three men working their way along the bank.
You men in the saloon! This is the sheriff speaking. Come out of there with your hands in the air. There'll be no shots fired.
Why, that's a damn kid they got for a sheriff. I already shot him once. He's supposed to be dead.
Yeah? If he is, ain't nobody told him yet.
If he'd raise up from behind that bank a little, I'd make damn sure he is.
You got no place to go. You're covered front and back. You might as well drop your weapons and come out of there with your hands up.
Son of a bitch. I'll tell you what, Sheriff. You and your men drop your weapons and come out of that river with your hands up, and I promise I won't shoot you. Damn! Return fire, goddammit!
With the start of the siege, Jason walked calmly up to the back door of Hatfield's store.
Patty Witcher!
You come on through that door, you'll get the same as your friend.
Patty, it's me, Jason Storm. Come on out of there and I'll take you to Hatfield's house.
Jason heard movement inside near the small back window. A few moments later, the door opened and there stood Patty, a wide grin on her face.
Oh, Lord, I'm glad to see you alive. I had to make sure there wasn't one of those bastards with a gun to your head trying to trick me into opening the door.
Now, come on. I'll get you to your husband and take you to the house.
You sure you don't need another gun?
No, I think we got all we need. Come on.
Inside the embattled building, the three desperados found it increasingly harder to return fire. With Booker in front and One Eye in back, Cantrell moved back and forth between the two, trying for a lucky shot. Up to this point, there were no casualties on either side, but it was getting more and more difficult for those holed up in the saloon. Gus, an unwilling spectator, had slid out of his chair in the corner to sit on the floor. A couple of stray bullets smashed into the wall near him.
Oh, Lord, if they don't shoot me, my friends will!
It was rapidly becoming obvious to the outlaws that this standoff was going to last until they finally ran out of ammunition.
I'm running low on cartridges. Anybody got some extra?
Booker looked at Cantrell, and Mace shook his head.
We're running out too.
Cantrell moved back beside One Eye.
Better hold off unless you've got a clear target. We're all running low on cartridges.
He peeked through a crack beside the back door, trying for an opportunity for a clean shot. Suddenly saw a ghost. It was only for an instant, but there was no mistaking the image.
Jason Storm!
He stepped back away from the door. Hearing the utterance as he paused to reload, Booker looked up.
What?
Cantrell backed farther away from the back door.
Jason Storm.
Jason Storm? Is that another one of your dead men come back to life?
I swear, I shot him. I saw him go down.
Cantrell turned to One Eye.
Well, shoot him! Shoot that son of a bitch! I can't get no angle to bear down on him. He's behind the big pine, and if I could get a little bit more out the door, I could get a piece of him.
One Eye slowly eased the door open about 6 inches, just enough to stick his rifle out to take aim. A bullet slammed into his chest. He staggered backward and dropped on the floor, his fingers still on the trigger.
One Eye, how bad are you hurt?
He's dead.
Cantrell slammed the door shut and locked it. From his vantage point at the edge of the window, he had seen the big lawman in lightning-like response whip his rifle up and send the fatal bullet through the small opening in the door. He began to feel that cold fear in his gut that had seized him before. This time, he had no chance to run. In the front of the saloon, Booker looked momentarily dazed.
Damn! Our gizzard's about cooked. We're gonna be out of cartridges before long.
Booker looked over at Gus, who was still huddled in the corner.
I reckon it's time we found out if his friends give a shit about him. I had a feeling we might need old Gus before this little party was over.
What are you talking about?
Old Gus is our ticket out of here. Ain't that right, Gus? Give me your apron.
Gus removed his dirty white apron and tossed it to him. Booker knotted it around the muzzle of his rifle. Moving to the front door, he stuck the white flag through the crack and waved it back and forth.
Hey, Sheriff, I got something to say. Hold your fire.
The only thing you gotta say is you surrender.
You better listen to me. I got your neighbor in here, and if you don't want him killed, you'd best listen to my terms.
You ain't got no terms. How do we know you ain't already killed Gus?
We ain't touched a hair on his head. Get over here. Tell him you're all right.
Gus moved to the door.
I'm all right, Tom. They ain't done nothing to me yet.
That's right. Yet. But he's gonna die if you don't listen to reason. Now here's the deal. We want out of this town, and you want us out. We ain't killed none of your people, and you killed three of mine, so that ought to square us with whatever damage we've done. You get Jason Storm and them others from around back and bring them up front where we can see all of you. We'll bring Gus out with us and get on our horses. Then we'll leave your lovely little town of paradise and we'll never set foot in it again. All right? What do you say? Is old Gus alive worth it?
Outside, Tom Austin, Joe Galt, and Wilson James considered their options.
I don't trust those bastards.
Neither do I. But I don't think they're bluffing about shooting Gus. I don't think we got much choice. We're about to run out of ammunition. I don't know how much they've got.
Tom turned to Wilson.
Maybe you'd better circle around the alley and tell them to come up here.
All right.
Well, what do you say?
I sent for the others. Just wait till they get here.
Jason Storm. I want to see him out there with everybody else.
Several minutes passed, and then the three in back joined Tom and the others. Tom quickly told Jason what Booker was proposing and asked his advice.
Don't seem like you got much choice if they're holding Gus hostage. We can't gamble with his life.
Tom nodded his agreement.
All right! We're all here and your horses are still at the rail!
Inside the saloon, Cantrell was momentarily stunned by the sight of his personal devil, Jason Storm.
Son of a goddamn bitch!
In a fit of rage, he jerked his rifle up and aimed it at the lawman. Booker was quick to grab the rifle barrel and snatch it up to send a bullet through the ceiling.
You damn fool! You get us both killed!
Booker returned quickly to the door.
That was just an accident. No harm done. Gus is still all right. Tell him, Gus.
I'm all right.
The shot fired through the roof had caused a predictable reaction from the group of vigilantes outside. Everyone had scrambled for cover, the one exception being Jason Storm. He wasn't sure what caused the shot. Maybe they decided to shoot Gus, but that didn't make any sense. Whatever the reason, he was sure the shot wasn't fired in their direction, so he accepted Booker's explanation. Booker watched him stand up.
Everything's like you wanted. Come on out of there and we won't shoot as long as we can see Gus is all right.
The young sheriff stepped up to stand beside Jason.
You make sure nobody shoots and causes Gus to get killed.
Tom nodded and went to spread the warning.
All right, we're coming out.
It was a solemn group of men that stood witnessing the hostage situation as Booker marched Gus out ahead of him. Staying close to his captive, he held a Colt handgun pressed up against the back of Gus's skull, the hammer cocked. Cantrell walked almost as close, the three men stepping as one.
I'm glad you boys are being sensible about this.
Booker guided Gus over to the horses.
Now, in case any of you are thinking about picking one of us off, I can guarantee you that I'll pull this trigger as soon as the first shot is fired. We're taking Gus with us when we ride out of here, but I'll let him go at the edge of town as long as nobody shoots at us.
Jason watched closely in case there was an opportunity for a quick kill shot, but he decided it wasn't worth the risk. Somebody was bound to get hurt, even if he got Booker, because Cantrell would surely retaliate. But he remained ready to react if necessary, but he was convinced the showdown would have to come at a different time and place. Booker marched Gus around behind the horses, putting the animals between the three men and the vigilantes. Taking only two horses, Booker put Gus in the saddle and climbed up behind him.
Jason Storm, never had the pleasure of meeting you before, but I know your reputation. Too bad we have to run off in such a hurry.
Oh, I'll be seeing you.
Booker's grin widened. The two surviving outlaws backed away until satisfied it was safe to turn and gallop toward the south road. Jason turned and started walking toward the stables to get his horse. The lone pistol shot needed no explanation. On the southern side of the river, at the ford where the road crossed the river into town, Gus's body slid out of the saddle and landed at the horse's back feet, causing the animal to sidestep. Booker hauled back on the reins just long enough to cast a final look at the body with a single hole in the base of the skull.
That's for one eye and stump!
The group of vigilantes stood grimly around Gus Hopkins' body as Jason pulled up.
Sons of bitches killed him, Jason.
They headed south, Storm.
Everyone anxiously began pointing down the south road. As Jason expected, Gus lay stone dead, and the potential posse stood gathered around his corpse, a long walk back to their horses. Jason didn't take the time to enlist any help. He nudged Biscuit, and the big buckskin gelding jumped to a gallop. A little over a mile ahead of Jason, having left the road and now following a wide stream that fed into the river, Booker and Cantrell paused when they came to a fork.
That big son of a bitch will be coming after us.
Cantrell looked back over his shoulder as if Jason might show up at any second.
We'll do well to split up. He might be the damn stud horse they say he is, but he can't follow both of us.
Cantrell wasn't sure he liked the idea, but he did know it was a guarantee that one of them would be free in a way.
If we're careful enough riding up this stream, we might both cover our trails. Just stay in the water till you find a good place to get out.
All right, I'll take the right fork.
Cantrell noticed that it seemed to be more heavily wooded.
Where are you figuring on heading once you lose him?
I don't know. I reckon I'll go to Brownie Bowen's place at Three Forks, where we met you. I'll be needing supplies by then. What do you say, whichever one of us gets there first waits a day before moving on?
Brownie's place, then.
Yeah! Cantrell promptly kicked his horse into a run again. Booker watched him splashing off up the right fork of the stream for a few moments until he was out of sight in the trees. Then he followed him, riding a few yards along the sandy bank of the right fork before entering the water. Satisfied that the hoof prints were distinct enough to indicate a horse went up the right fork, he turned his horse in the water and went back to follow the left fork. By the time Jason reached that fork in the stream, the sun was already beginning to set behind the western hills. It had cost him some time when he almost missed the point where the outlaws had left the road and taken to the prairie. Now, with barely enough light to see by, he dismounted and studied the tracks leading into the right fork of the stream.
Just a careless mistake or a false lead?
He had to think it over. Disappointed by his inability to catch the two outlaws before darkness set in, he realized the chances of losing them now were greater than ever. It was going to be another long chase. He stood up from the stream bank and looked toward the dark hills to the south and east. It was going to take some time. He would need supplies and ammunition if he was going to undertake it.
Damn. Looks like I'm bound to be trailing some murderer or thief until I turn my toes up.
Feeling that he had no choice, he stepped up in the saddle and headed back to Paradise Valley. He had no time to ride all the way back to his place on Blind Woman Creek, so he planned on getting what he needed at Fred Hatfield's store. He had a little money hidden at his cabin, and he was sure Fred would give him credit. The vigilantes were still gathered at the saloon when he got back to town. Most of the other citizens of Paradise Valley had joined him as soon as the word had gotten around that it was safe to do so. Spotting Jason when he tied Biscuit in front of Hatfield's, Tom Austin and Joe Galt hurried over to meet him.
Lost their trail when it got dark. They'll be going out again in the morning.
The look on Tom's face was unmistakable. He had obviously hoped for better news.
You want me to ride with you?
Nope. Most likely be gone for a spell. The town shouldn't be without a sheriff for that long. Besides, you ain't got no jurisdiction outside the city limits.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I should stay here.
I ain't got no jurisdiction. I'll go with you.
Well, I appreciate it, Joe, but you're really the only man here the sheriff can count on to help keep the peace. I don't think you have to worry about those two ever coming back to Paradise Valley. But I know Tom would feel better having you close.
He started up the steps to the store, but then he stopped.
You ever run into a whole lot of trouble? Well, you can always call on Patty Witcher.
I reckon.
Jason was treated to a big supper that night, courtesy of Lena Hatfield. She said nothing about it, but Rosanna suspected that Lena had finally seen the true worth of Jason Storm. Hatfield's store had been hit hard by the outlaws, but thanks to Patty Witcher, the store lost nothing during Cantrell's second visit to the town. Fred and Lena still felt confident they could survive if the rest of the town stuck with them. Dr. Taylor Boys, Mike, had already talked to Fred about driving a team of mules to Helena every 2 months for new inventory, and there was plenty of produce to be had from the farms close by. With confidence that they had seen the last of Cantrell and Booker, there was a positive atmosphere at the table that night.
Pass the chicken, please, Fred.
When she thought no one was watching her, Rosanna would steal a glance at the quiet man across the table from her. Almost every time when she looked away again, she was met with a wry smile from Lena. Jason, on the other hand, was reluctant to even steal a glance at Rosanna, lest she might think him too bold. He was not feeling especially robust at any rate. The day's activities put a strain on his healing wound, and he didn't feel at full strength. It was Rosanna who noticed the small spot of blood on his shirt.
Jason, your wound, it's starting to bleed.
He looked down, surprised. The wound had been aching, but he was not aware it was bleeding.
We'd better go right over and see Dr. Taylor.
I don't think it's that bad. Just a little too much strain on it today. It'll stop bleeding in a minute.
He got up from the table.
I'll go take care of it.
Rosanna popped up from her chair.
I'd better have a look at it myself. You'll probably make it worse.
She pushed him toward the back porch and the pump.
Take your shirt off.
On the back porch, she lifted his bandage and examined the wound.
Oh, Jason, this has bled quite a bit. Damn it, you need to let this thing heal proper, and that means to rest. Why don't you forget those two outlaws and give this wound time to heal?
I can't do that, Rosanna.
Those two men are responsible for a lot of hurt to some good people, and they're just gonna keep doing it until somebody stops them. I reckon that job falls on me.
You can at least wait until you're fit.
The trail is already cold. I need to go as soon as I can.
I guess there's no use trying to talk sense, is there?
She replaced the old bandage with a fresh one, then handed him his shirt.
Well, that's about the best I can do. At least the bleeding has stopped for now.
I appreciate it, Rosanna.
He gazed into her eyes for a long moment, but said nothing.
I reckon I'd best get out to the barn and get some shut-eye. I gotta leave early in the morning.
She didn't say anything for a few moments as well, but just continued to meet his gaze, a troubled frown upon her face. Then she reached out and took his arm.
Jason, you've been married before, and so have I. We're neither one as young as we used to be, but I think it would be a good idea if we got married. I'd be a good wife to you, and you might learn to love me after a while. There's no use in us both being alone when it seems to me we'd be a good match.
Jason stood speechless.
I've got the start of a good farm east of town, or we could live in your place on Blind Woman Creek. I'll go either place.
She released his arm and waited for his reply. Stunned to the point of paralysis, he stood there motionless. He waited a few moments for his brain to process her thunderbolt. She took his hesitancy to be a sign that he did not feel receptive to her proposition.
I'm sorry I was so bold. There's no need to give me your answer right now. Think it over while you're gone, and if you don't come back, I'll take that to be your answer. To tell the truth, I'm not positive that I'm in love with you. I just know that I want to be with you. Take care of you. I've never really been in love before, so I don't know how to be sure. If the offer doesn't appeal to you, I'll hold no hard feelings.
No, it's... It's just that you took me by surprise. I had no idea. I mean, I'd be lying if I told you I hadn't thought about it. I have. Too many times when I should have had my mind on something else. I just thought you wouldn't have any interest in a worn-out old man like me. I don't have to think it over. You'd be doing me an honor. But are you sure you want to hitch up with the likes of me?
I'm sure. And you're far from a worn-out old man. I'm planning on at least 50 more years together.
Rosanna had succeeded in rendering Jason Storm helpless, a feat never accomplished by even the most dangerous outlaw. He could only stand there, gazing wide-eyed at the woman he thought about so many times by a lonely campfire, his brain a whirl as he tried to settle it down. Then it occurred to him.
Will you marry me then?
Yes.
All right, then. I reckon we got a deal.
I reckon.
Can I kiss you?
In answer, she stood on tiptoe and offered her lips. He bent down awkwardly and pressed his lips upon hers and then withdrew.
Come on, you kiss your horse like that.
Then she put her arms around his neck and pulled him down to her again. After a long embrace, she released him.
Now you know you've been kissed.
That's for sure. Biscuit don't kiss like that.
I know this doesn't change anything. You're still going after those two. But Jason Storm, you be careful. I want you back here safe and sound.
She reached up and gently touched his shirt where she had stitched closed the bullet hole.
I'll fix that a little better when you get back. There wasn't much to work with at your cabin.
She fixed him with a stern eye.
I don't want to see any more holes in that shirt.
Yes, ma'am.
There followed an awkward silence with neither party knowing what to say.
Well, I'd better let you get to bed. You need all the rest you can get for that wound to heal.
She reached up again and quickly kissed him goodbye, then turned on her heel to go back in the house, knowing Lena would be waiting to question her.
Rosanna, I'll be coming back.
The next morning, Jason returned to the fork of the wide stream. He knelt down beside the water and examined the hoof prints again. There were prints from only one horse. That meant the two split up, or that the other horse was already in the water and they both took the right fork. Or they could have been left on purpose to throw him off their trail. The left fork cut a winding pattern across a sparsely treed prairie, while the right fork seemed to lead into the tree-covered hills. There was no contest as to which way promised to offer the best cover, and consequently the best chance of losing anyone following. And the only tracks he found led that way, so he decided to take the right fork. He carefully followed the stream as it led him through the foothills before a chain of mountains to the west. His instincts told him that he might be following a blind alley, but he found no signs of a horse leaving the water. It didn't seem reasonable that a man would ride that far before leaving the stream, but who could say what these two might do? Climbing higher up in the mountain, he finally came to a point that caused him to turn around, for he came upon a small pond in the stream at the base of a waterfall some 30 or 40 feet high. There were no tracks around the pond, and the ground was bare enough that there would have been. He turned around and started back down the mountain. He had missed their tracks somewhere along the way, a fact that irritated him more than a little. But his luck was no better on the way back down. There were several spots that offered possible exit from the water without leaving tracks, most of them rocky projections that jutted out into the stream. He checked some of them out, but to no avail. With no other options, he returned to the fork and started searching the left one. The results were the same as before. He couldn't find any sign that someone had ridden out of the water. Finally, late in the afternoon, he admitted that he had been outfoxed and he didn't know where in hell they were. Still unwilling to let him get away, he decided to gamble on the possibility that they had gone back to Three Forks and Briny Bowen's hideout.
Damned if it ain't starting to look like old home week around here.
Booker walked into Briny's bar room tired and thirsty. The old man got up from his usual seat in the rocking chair by the fireplace and went over to the bar.
That friend of yourn was in here yesterday, but he lit out as soon as he bought some supplies, said he was in a hurry, acted like somebody was chasing him, said to tell you he was heading for Colorado if you showed up.
Booker found it interesting that Cantrell didn't wait for a day as they had agreed to do. Didn't surprise him, though, because Cantrell seemed to have an almost supernatural fear of Jason Storm. At least he'd shown up here, so Storm hadn't caught up with him. He just hoped to hell the scared son of a bitch hadn't left the trail straight to Briny's.
Colorado territory? Well, I sure as hell ain't planning on following him.
When he thought about it, he realized that he was glad to be rid of Cantrell. He could do without the constant squabbling over who was boss.
Pour me a drink of the good stuff, Briny. I've been doing some hard riding. I got a dry throat.
Hey, you going to be around for a while? Or are you going to cut out of here as fast as your partner did?
Briny wasn't particularly fond of Booker's company, but business had been a little slow of late, and he hoped the outlaw would lay up for a while and spend a little money.
I was thinking about staying overnight, long enough to catch my breath, let my horse rest up. Then I'm heading back east to Dakota. I can't make any more money around here.
Booker was not overly concerned about the possibility that Jason Storm might show up at Briny's. As far as he knew, Storm didn't know about this hideout, and it was not an easy place to find.
Good. Horace can fix you some supper, and you can put your horse in the corral. I'm glad to have somebody to talk to. Horace ain't much for conversation, but he makes a mean pot of beans and bacon. Hell, you might decide to stay around a while longer.
It was later on in the evening when Jason slow-walked Biscuit through the narrow pass that led to the creek where the French trappers had built their log trading post. Not wishing to announce his presence, he guided Biscuit through a stand of pines on the north side of the building. When he was almost to the base of the cliff, and even with the back corner of the corral, he dismounted and made his way up to the edge of the trees, where he knelt beside a large pine and took a closer look at the horses inside. There were four horses in the corral. If there were more in the barn, he couldn't say. But one of the horses he was looking for was in that corral. He had made it a point to pay attention to Cantrell's and Booker's horses when they rode away from Paradise. The gray that Booker rode was there in the corral. He was confident that it was the same horse. As far as Cantrell's, he wasn't sure. The brutal killer had ridden a sorrel, much like the one he was now looking at, but he didn't remember that Cantrell's horse had a white blaze down its face like this one. If he recalled correctly, Cantrell's had a stripe.
Well, maybe Cantrell's sorrel is in the barn, but most likely it would be with the other horse. Looks like they split up back at the fork of the stream after all.
A large black dog suddenly launched itself at Jason. He aimed a well-placed boot that caught the cur in the ribs. The dog scurried off toward the house and hid under the porch. Booker jumped up from the table where he'd been eating supper with Briny and Horace. He ran to the window. He had heard the dog outside.
That goddamn bloodhound! How the hell did he find this place?
He was there before, looking for your friend Cantrell.
The hell you say? Why the hell didn't somebody tell me he'd been here before?
He drew his pistol.
Well, he'll wish to hell he never found me.
Not in my place, damn it. Look, there ain't no need for him to know you're here. You can hide in the caves till he's gone.
Booker hesitated. There was little time to make a decision, but maybe he could avoid a shootout with this dangerous man hunter.
All right, then let's get going.
Horace, show him where to go. I'll stay here and stall Storm.
Follow me.
Horace led him to the open door behind the bar. They went through the storeroom to the back door, down three steps to the ground. It was only about 5 yards to the opening of the cave, hidden behind a thicket of small firs. Just inside the dark opening, Horace stooped to pick up a lantern and lit it. The lantern light revealed a limestone chamber about the size of a spacious living room with a 7-foot ceiling. At the back of the room, there were 2 dark openings.
You can take this.
Horace handed Booker the lantern.
There are 2 tunnels leading off from this cave. The one over there,
he pointed to the left opening.
That goes to another cave about maybe half of the size of this one here. That other one,
he pointed to the right.
That one can take you outside again, but it gets kind of tight before you get out. You have to crawl on your hands and knees for... Briny says last 10 or 12 yards.
He stepped back then and waited for Booker to enter one of the tunnels.